Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how's it going?
I am doing super, my super friend. Something super exciting happened to me for today, which is that sort of a dream come true happened, which is that I was in an officially published publication by DC Comics. My letter was published in today's issue of DC Nation number 6. I was the first ever letter in an issue of DC Nation. And they published my letter in it where I just geek out about Brian Michael Bendis's Superman in Action Comics. So, that was like super exciting for me today. It was like sort of like surreal.
Please tell me you didn't sign off on the letter with Aquino Ferreira.
I did. But they truncated the letter because they couldn't fit all of it, so that part didn't wind up making it into
Thank you, DC editing team. Good job. You all get a raise, not from me, but from the people at Warner Brothers.
Oh my god.
Oh, good. That's good. Excuse me. That's good. I'm gonna. You know what? I don't usually get those, but I'll check it out. I'll check it out.
Oh well, thank you.
I'll check it out because you're in it.
Thank you. Yeah, I was super excited. I read it this morning, and I was it was pretty surreal seeing my name in something published by DC Comics. So
cool, very cool.
Yeah, but I will also throw in another thing I'm super excited about, which is our Aquaman countdown clock, because we are officially 44 days away from Aquaman. So super exciting. We have a different Aquaman piece of content to review this episode, but. Super exciting.
Yeah, cool.
So how are you, my super friend?
I'm doing well. Speaking of published, as many of you know, I've been working on two comic books of my own, one of which I co-wrote, and that one is we got the official physical copies of that book. So two Time Traveling Geeks, the physical copy has been completed. And
congratulations.
Thank you. I did some signing for the Kickstarter benefactors that wanted my signature. So me and my co-writer spent a bit of time yesterday signing some copies, which was a weird experience because I've never had to do anything like that before. That was kind of interesting, but it was fun to do for our contributors. And so we are in the process of getting those ready to ship them out to the people that wanted the physical copy. So that's what's been going on for the last day or so. Excited by getting one week closer to Aquaman since the last time we spoke.
Yes, indeed, my super friend.
I do, if I can go on a mini rant for a second. I do want to caution. I haven't done one of these in a while. I wasn't on the last, the small episode. Actually, two mini things I want to touch on. My smaller rating from that I didn't get to do because it wasn't on the show. I really like season 8 quite a bit. I liked the way they handled Doomsday in terms of sort of making him a sort of similar to the Hulk in the way he emerges kind of thing.
I think it's a stroke of genius because it adds this whole other layer to the character that we'd never seen before.
Sure, yeah. So I really like that aspect of it. And for the fact that for a good half of the season, or most of the, I think even more than that, you know, Doomsday was portrayed in the shadows. So the build up to finally seeing him was well done, and then the payoff of seeing him, obviously.
It's terrifying in Bride when he goes through the Kent farm and you're only seeing him in shadow.
Yeah, it's like Cloverfield.
That's what Harry was saying on the episode. It's like found footage horror.
Yeah, which was directed by Matt Reeves, which is part of my second rant. But I really liked the aspects of Doomsday, and even how they played with the idea that he was a scientific experiment created by, you know, I think it was Feora and Zod. Mm-hmm. So that's in keeping with a particular version of the comic book. So I appreciated that as well. Mm-hmm. I liked. While I don't like the character of Linda Lake, I did like the episode that she was in, just for the portion of the fact that it sort of showed Clark what would happen if he revealed himself, but also it starts planting the seed for the idea that he has to have a secret identity, a dual identity, to be able to make this kind of thing work. So that was a nice step forward on the road to Superman, if you will. Let's see, what else did I like? The Legion episode was great, written by Geoff Johns, and I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Lightning Lad that said, he doesn't fly, he can't wear this. So he's kind of, you know, nitpicking and pointing out all the things that some of the fans that had a problem with it did, and he's kind of that surrogate character for that, which was kind of funny. But also the fact that he was like this, super fanboy of Clark, which was a cool twist.
Those characters are always relatable for us, I feel like.
yeah, definitely. I really liked the Tess Mercer character, her introduction. Mm-hmm. She was quite the villainess in the early part of her run on Smallville. She was quite good in that role.
I always talk about it with her, how she had the reverse arc to what Lex had on the show. Lex was the Luthor who Clark, and Clark tells him this in the finale, "I'm sorry, I couldn't save you, Lex." Lex was the Luthor who Clark couldn't save, and Tess was the Luthor who Clark could save, because Lex went from his friend to his enemy, and Tess went from his enemy to his friend.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good point. Good point. It actually was. She's the Bizarro Lex in that way. Complete with hair and all. I liked her character a lot. And then there was the Maxima episode was another one that I liked. I really liked the way they handled that. That was one of my favorites. You start to see the seeds planted for the Lois and Clark dynamic. That furthers along, especially with the setting shifting to the Daily Planet. I really appreciated that. Well played by both Tom Welling and Erica Durance. If I had a wish list of things I wish they had done, I wish the Doomsday fight had been a little longer. I felt it was a little short for my liking, like the actual fight of it all. I really liked the season. My feelings on the Lana stuff. I'm not going to dwell on it, but it derailed things a little bit, but that's just me.
That's part of the season.
For you, but not for me. It was nearly a perfect season. The only things that prevent it from being so is the shortness of the Doomsday fight, because I wanted more. I'm greedy that way. And the Lana stuff. So for that, my rating would be an A- for season 8 of Smallville.
That was Harry's writing as well.
There we go. Harry's a smart man. but
yes, he is. Guess what? Guess what? He loves Lana.
Well, except for that. Everybody, everybody has a vice. That's his. No.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So I just wanted to share my thoughts on Smallville season 8, since I wasn't able to be here. The other mini rant I want to touch on is this. So it's not part of our news section. That's why I'm handling it now. Matt Reeves has taken on he's producing a pilot, a TV pilot, right? And it seems like every time Matt Reeves is announced for something, the internet goes into a freakout mode. Because him producing a TV pilot, in some people's minds, means, oh, that means the Batman's in trouble, and that means he's going to be off the Batman. And I've seen this sentiment echoed since it broke yesterday in several places. And let me just say, no, it doesn't mean that at all. You know, I want to, and look, you know this, Jordan, that, you know, Batman's my favorite, with Superman being right next to him. But here's me, the huge Batman fan. The first movie I ever saw was a Batman movie in theaters, telling everybody two things. And have some patience. Him producing something does not mean that he's going to drop out of the Batman. Like J.J. Abrams, guess what? He directs things, and he also produces things. It's how things are done. I get people want Batman tomorrow, right? I'm always the one that says, you know, give me Birds of Prey tomorrow, give me Aquaman tomorrow. But in this case, have some patience. It's not like we haven't seen Batman on film, not the site, I'm talking about the character in an actual movie, for 2 decades. He was in BVS in 2016, Suicide Squad, he had a guest spot also in 2016. And in 2017, he was in Justice League. So it's not like we're on some massive Batman drought here. So I'm preaching a little bit of patience. We know that the first draft of the script has come in. Warner Brothers and Matt Reeves together are working to make this thing the best possible Batman film they can. Whether it's here in 2020, which probably won't, 2021, which is more likely, or even 2022. Whatever it takes for Warner Brothers and Matt Reeves to put out the best Batman film possible is what we should be wanting and applauding. So please don't overreact over him taking on a producing role and just have a little patience. Look, there's the Joker in 2019, right? Which is Batman related. There's Birds of Prey in 2020, Batman adjacent characters. So it's not like, again, there's going to be quote unquote Batman things in the cinematic world. So it's not like we're seeing absolutely nothing Batman related. So again, preaching patience. It's hard for me too, but let's have a little and let's applaud Warner Brothers and Matt Reeves for wanting to make the best Batman film possible. And that's my rant.
Alrighty. Well, with that, we can move into our comic recommendations.
Yes. Let's do it. What do you have this week?
Yes, well, this week I have a classic, but it's a classic, but it's one that one that I feel is very fitting to recommend right now because Supergirl is taking a lot of inspiration from it this season, and Supergirl Radio, shout out to that podcast because I love that podcast. Rebecca and Morgan do super work over there. They just reviewed this book, and it's one that I absolutely love, and that would be Superman Red Son. The best Elseworlds story ever written, in my opinion. It has Lana featured in it, and There's a little bit of Klonna stuff in that book that I love. One of the most chilling Batman scenes I've ever seen anywhere occurs in that book. Some of the way it portrays Lex Luthor, who's my favorite villain of all time, the way it portrays him, just his intelligence, I feel like the book just captures so well. And the dynamic between Superman and Lex in the book, I think, is just absolutely brilliant. And, you know, we were talking a few weeks ago about Constantine City of Demons, the movie, and just how brilliant the twist at the end of that is. Well, talk about something else that has just a mind-blowing twist, and that would be Superman Red Son. Supergirl Season 4 has only started to touch on what they're adapting from that, but I'm super excited to see where things go with that moving forward. So very fitting, I thought, to do Superman Red Son as my comic recommendation this episode.
Good call.
Thank you.
It's a great book.
Yes, indeed.
I just started reading, I'm late to the party, but such is life sometimes. I just started reading Batman Sins of the Father. The adaptation of the Telltale game. Mm-hmm. I'm about four issues in. I'm loving it so far. It picks up right from the, you know, sort of off the events of the game.
The first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, if you know, my recommendation is play the game first. But I think if you don't, it sets itself up in a way that I don't think you'll little clues along the way of what they're talking about and what happens to put certain situations in play. But what I love about it is his reliance. Like, there are a couple of times where he mentions, Lucius Fox, and it's heavily rooted in, you know, there's a lot of Wayne Enterprises in there. It reminds me, it's very reminiscent of Batman Begins in terms of in mm-hmm. those aspects of the story. And also, the art is phenomenal. I'm absolutely loving it.
Raphael Lienko.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, overall, I'm really enjoying this series so far. So that's my recommendation, even though I haven't finished it.
Yeah. Well, I have finished that series, and I second that recommendation. It's absolutely super. Some of the stuff they do with Deadshot and that is just, I mean, it's brilliant. And it's funny you say that. It reminds me a bit of Batman Begins, because just the Telltale series in general, the tone of it and the way they do things, I think there are a lot of similarities to the Dark Knight trilogy. Mm. And you also bring up the art, like I was saying, Raphael. So does it remind you of Gary Frank's art a little bit? It reminds me of that and Frank Catelli, like a mix of those two.
Yeah, I for sure see that, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was just curious. It sort of reminds me of that.
Especially Gary Frank, now that you said his name.
Yeah, especially like what he did on Batman Earth 1. Like, it reminds me a lot of that.
I would say Gary Frank mixed with the one who's done some issues on Batman. I think he did the first arc, and he was
David Finch.
No, not the cover art. The main, not Finch. Sorry. He did the main.
Tell the
regular stuff. That's it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, David so Finch did the regulars. Did the interiors. Too.
Yes. I mix that. Yeah. But no. Oh, okay. It's
definitely... But you're thinking of Janine.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the other thing I was going to touch on that you brought up is the way it focuses a lot on Bruce and like at Wayne Enterprises, and that's something I think the Telltale series as a whole does really well, is focusing on Bruce just as much as it does on Batman. And so I'm totally with you there.
So it's good stuff.
Sounds good, my super friend. Well, I hope you continue to enjoy it.
I'm sure I will. If it continues going the way it's going, then I definitely will.
Cool, cool. Well, sounds good, my super friend. I guess it's time for us to move into the news.
Let's do it.
Well, first off, this is very fitting, given that we were just talking about Tom King's Batman, and that is that Psycho Pirate has been cast for the Elseworlds crossover. He's going to be played by Bob Fraser. I have seen him in one thing, which is he had a small role in Supergirl Season 3. So he's one of those actors in the Arrowverse who's played multiple roles in the Arrowverse, like Patrick Sabongwe, like Juliana Harkavy. So he's one of those actors, but it was just a small role. So that's the only thing I'm familiar with him. But I'm super excited to see what he brings to Psycho Pirate. And Psycho Pirate is just a villain that he's super unique. I loved in particular what Tom King did with him in his run, like in I Am Bane. He did a lot of stuff with Psycho Pirate. So I'm super excited to see him in the Elseworlds crossover. How about you, my super friend?
It's like I said, I don't know much about the actor other than probably what you pointed out.
He played an angry father.
That doesn't help much.
It was last season when all those kids were being poisoned.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he played the father of one of the kids, yeah.
All right, fair enough. It's just cool to see the character being adapted for live action, right? And just the amount of characters that are in this thing is making it quite impressive. This has nothing to do with Psycho Pirate, but it does concern the Elseworlds episodes. Did you see that they filmed Wayne Enterprises?
Yes.
Chicago. Now, they filmed Batman Begins and Dark Knight in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at some behind the scenes on set. And Mark Guggenheim's post about he said something along the lines of, if you can't bring the Arrowverse or Wayne Enterprises to the Arrowverse, bring the Arrowverse to Wayne Enterprises.
Yeah.
And the building, from the shot that he took and the location and the building, I kind of looked side by side at a shot from that building and the for Wayne Enterprises in Batman Begins. I think it's the same building, the same exterior.
Man, this Elseworlds crossover, what they're doing, using the same Kent farm from Smallville, potentially using the same Wayne Enterprises from
Batman Begins. No, unless my eyes are going like super early, I'm pretty sure that's the same building. And I'm excited about that. Now, here's my question to you. Do you think that for the Batwoman pilot and eventual series, do you think the CW actually takes filming to Chicago, or do they film exterior shots in Chicago and then film on a soundstage in Vancouver or Atlanta or Toronto or somewhere like that?
My guess is the latter. Hopefully Atlanta, because that means that, like Black Lightning and like Doom Patrol, that there will be some locations here where they'll be filming that I'll be familiar with, and perhaps I could even see one of the actors at some point. But so that would be my hope there. My guess is it's the latter, though, just because that's where they typically have filmed, with the exception of Supergirl Season 1, because that was on CBS. Other than that, they've filmed all in Vancouver or Atlanta, so in terms of the CW shows.
Yeah.
So,
like I said, I think it'd be cool if they used exterior shots of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then did everything else on the sound stages or whatever.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, Smallville used shots from the Narrows from Batman Begins.
Yeah.
So like they could do something like that.
Yeah. And so if like I said, if they want to come film in Toronto, I'm cool with that, because Gotham already Toronto's already doubled for Gotham twice in Suicide Squad and in Titans apparently. I'd be good with that, but it's definitely interesting that they're that they're using that building because it's just going to be awesome.
Well, that is quite the segue, my super friend, because speaking of Gotham City, actually, you know what? I'm going to ruin the segue because the other thing I wanted to mention about Psycho Pirate is that he's only, much like Lois, he's only going to be in the Arrow and Supergirl parts of the crossover, so he won't be on the Flash episode. So I just wanted to point that out. But
is Ruby, the question is, Ruby Rose in all three? Do we know? Do we?
I haven't heard that she's not, which makes me assume that she is.
Okay. All right.
Cool. Yeah. So hopefully that would be awesome. But pretending that I didn't ruin my segue, speaking of Gotham City, we now have some more casting for Gotham, which is that Jamie Murray has been cast in a recurring role in season 5 as an antagonist, primarily to Gordon. She's going to be playing the character of Teresa Walker, who is described, and this is coming from Deadline's article, she is described as, quote, well, there's not really a good way to quote this. I'll just quote the whole sentence. The character emerges as Jim Gordon's Ben McKenzie principal nemesis in the season, who comes to Gotham harboring a dark secret about her past. So Teresa Walker is not a character from the comics, but this could be a case of like Theo Gallivan on Gotham, who was not technically a character from the comics, but then of course they gave him a connection to character from the comics with him becoming Azrael on the show. Or it could be like a Miranda Tate situation where it's revealed that she's really a character from the comics. So Miranda Tate obviously was really Talia. So this could be a similar situation there where Teresa Walker is just an alias. But in any case, I'm super excited to see I'm not familiar with Jamie Murray, but I'm super excited to see what she brings to the role and to see how this character fits into the season. Gotham has always killed it with their villains. So I'm super excited to see a new one. What are your thoughts, my super friend?
I mean, I'm not, again, I'm not familiar with the actress that much. So I can't speak to that. And they don't, aside from her being an antagonist, they don't tell us which, you know, like if the character is, I mean, they tell us the name, but you know, it's not anybody that we can recognize from the comics. So yeah, I can't really speak to my excitement to that either, but I'll just say that, you know, most of the people that they've brought on to play villains or what have you on Gotham, I've enjoyed. So if they continue down the trend that they've gone, then I'm pretty sure I'll be excited about it.
Cool. Sounds good, my super friend. You think, this just occurred to me, you think she has any relation to Saint Walker and they're bringing in the Blue Lanterns?
I think that's a little bit of a stretch. I think that's, for Gotham to do that in the last season, that'd be reaching. I'm gonna say no on that one. Confident no.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I didn't think that was likely either, but I just thought I thought I'd mention that because
fake news. Walker. It's not happening.
Anyway, moving on to Swamp Thing, we have some casting for that as well. We'll talk about one now and then.
So wait a minute. We're not draining the swamp. We're filling the swamp. That's what you're saying. Because
we've got one to talk about now, and then we'll move on to something else real quick, and then move back to it. But for the first casting we have to talk about is Maria Sunderland, who is going to be played by Virginia Madsen, who she is the actor out of all the actors that we're talking about. We got a ton of casting news recently, and out of all the actors that have been cast, she is the one I am most familiar with. Let me just read off all the DC stuff she has done already, because like this is almost Alan Tudyk level in terms of the number of DC characters that she has played.
Maybe they're having a competition. Maybe they're,
you know. Her and Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
That would be funny. But anyway, first off, her first DC role was on Justice League as Dr. Sarah Corwin. Then she also played Aurella, Raven's mother, on Teen Titans. Then on Justice League Unlimited, she played Roulette. And then in the Wonder Woman animated movie, she played Queen Hippolyta. So she has played both Raven's mother and Wonder Woman's mother already. And now she's going to be playing the wife of Avery Sunderland, who's going to be presumably the big bad of season one of Swamp Thing. And we'll talk about, he got cast as well, so we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But she is described as, and this is coming from also from Deadline's article, she is described as someone who, quote, traded in her privileged upbringing for the swamps of Morice, when she married local business magnate Avery Sunderland, not yet cast, which now he is, but at the time of this article he was not. But Avery's lifetime obsession with the swamp has driven a wedge between him and Maria. Her poised existence is shaken further when the return of Abby Arcane reawakens a deep grief over the loss of Maria's daughter, Shauna, drawing her into the dark supernatural mysteries emerging from the swamp. So I am super excited about this, my super friend. I have loved Virginia Madsen in all of her previous DC roles that I mentioned. What are your thoughts on this?
She seems well... she's well placed in the DC universe, but also in terms of live action, she's a really strong actress. This is a good addition, and like I said, they're assembling quite a bit of talent for the Swamp Thing show. So I am getting more and more excited as the news trickles in.
Yes, indeed, I'm totally with you, my super friend. Well, moving on. Briefly, before we get back to Swamp Thing, to another show on the DC Universe Digital Service, which is Stargirl, which personally is the show that I am the most excited for. I'm excited for all of them, but especially Stargirl. I've talked about it before, how much this show, everything we're hearing about it, reminds me so much of Smallville. But we have some more casting news for Stargirl, which is that Angelica Washington has been cast in an undisclosed role. We do have a quote from Jeff Johns about her, which is, Angelica Washington is a bright, funny, and unbelievably talented actor, and I'm thrilled to have her join the cast alongside Breck. We're withholding the character she's playing for now, but it'll be one familiar to DC Comics fans. So, again, I am not familiar with Angelica Washington, but I am super excited to see what she brings to whoever she's playing. I say it all the time, but DC, just their track record of casting is absolutely super. So even when they cast an actor that I have zero familiarity with, I always have the utmost confidence. Super excited to see who she's playing when that eventually does get announced. Unless maybe they'll just leave it for a surprise for the show, and then we won't find out until we're actually watching the show. Who knows? But I'm super excited. What are your thoughts, my super friend?
My thoughts are this. I wish they would start telling us who these people are playing, so we can have more meat to chew on when we have news like this.
Well, it's like a surprise.
I understand, but Jesus, come on! Like every piece of news we're talking about tonight, virtually, is undisclosed role.
We know Psycho Pirate. We know the name.
Their characters. Okay, if you're gonna cast an trade-off. If you're going to cast an actress or actor that I'm not familiar with, then at least tell me who the character is.
I can understand that. But I just want to point out, she's the only one whose character's name we do not know out of all the people we're talking about being cast.
Having said that, if Jeff Johns is down with her, then I'm down with her.
Fair enough.
And that's my thought on that.
Sounds good. Former Smallville writer Jeff Johns, that is.
Well, you had to do it.
I did. In fact, especially because you mentioned that one of the episodes of Smallville that he wrote this episode, which was Legion.
Yeah.
So, of course I had to. Well, let's be honest.
I would have done it anyway.
Yeah. But anyway, moving back to Swamp Thing, like I just said, we got the casting of Maria Sunderland. And we just talked about her, but now we have the casting of her husband as well. And while Maria is not a character from the comics, her husband, Avery, is. And yes, he is going to be played by actor Will Patton, who I am not familiar with. So another actor on here that I'm not familiar with. But like I said about Angelica, I'm super excited to see what he brings to the role nonetheless. Yeah, the character description, and this is coming from Tim Beadle's article for DCComics.com. He is a most prominent businessman. Avery Sunderland serves as the de facto patriarch of his Louisiana hometown, always giving back to the community. His benevolent veneer, however, masks a ruthless determination to harness the power of the swamp for profit. So basically, you know what? I'll make a connection to something else we're talking about in this episode. He basically sounds like a Ferris Boyle type character. what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Thank you.
yeah, and like I said, I having read Swamp Thing, the more I hear about this, the more I'm liking the direction they're going. The character descriptions, it sounds like the show is really, really going to hit a home run right off the start. So,
yes, yeah, indeed.
It's coming together very nicely, and it's going to be, it's definitely working itself into the most anticipated category. Like, it's getting up into that echelon.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, my super friend. Sorry, what's that?
Yeah, no, I'm on board with this.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I am totally with you, my super friend. And that is not all the Swamp Thing news we have, because now we've saved the biggest casting for last, which is that we now have both our Alec Holland and our Swamp Thing. So actor Andy Bean has been cast as Alec. So they're basically doing the same thing that Smallville did with Doomsday, where the actor playing him, there's going to be two actors playing him, where I guess in his human form before his transformation into Swamp Thing, we'll see one actor, and then we'll see another actor actually in whatever makeup or prosthetics they have for Swamp Thing. Anyway, sort of like Smallville did with Sam Witwer didn't actually play Doomsday in the Doomsday suit. He just played Davis. So anyway, Smallville connection, always got to point it out. But actor Andy Bean has been cast as Alec. Andy I'm not familiar with. But playing Swamp Thing is Derek Mears, who played Dwarf Star on season 4 of The Flash. So I thought he was super as Dwarf Star, and I'm super excited to see him in another DC role. So another actor here who's played multiple DC roles, like we mentioned with Bob Fraser. And then with Virginia Madsen, this is also an actor returning to the DC universe. So I'm super excited about that. And Andy Bean, even though I'm not familiar with him, I'm super excited to see what he brings to the role of Alec. What are your thoughts, my super friend?
I mean, like you, I'm not familiar with the Alec Holland actor, but I am familiar with the Swamp Thing actor. But I will. I definitely like the Swamp Thing choice, and I'm totally on board with giving the Alec Holland actor the benefit of the doubt. I find it very interesting that they're using two separate people for the two roles. You know, like you said, like Smallville did, but before that, like the Incredible Hulk did, with Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno. So. Yeah, I mean that's an interesting way of doing it, and the fact that they're probably going to go practical effects with makeup and all that mixed with CGI, I think is a good way to go, and so I'm on board.
Yeah, absolutely, totally with you, my super friend. Well, now I alluded to this earlier, but now we can move into our review of the Batman the Animated Series episode Heart of Ice, which let me just start off by saying. This is my favorite episode of Batman the Animated Series. If we're talking about, if we're including the new Batman Adventures 2, then there's an episode in that tops it, which is Girls' Night Out. But if we're just talking about Batman the Animated Series without the new Batman Adventures, this is my favorite episode. And, of course, we got to start off with our IMDb description. And you're thinking one sentence or more than one sentence, my super friend?
Well, given the magnitude of this episode, I would hope for more, but I have no faith in IMDb. So one sentence.
Alrighty, you are correct, my super friend, and that is Batman must stop a vengeful Mr. Freeze from fulfilling his vendetta against a callous businessman. And like I usually say with these IMDb descriptions, well, it is succinct, it is accurate. This episode, I always got to shout out our writer and director, and written by Paul Dini and directed by Bruce Timm. So of course it's an absolutely super episode because the two biggest names behind Batman the Animated Series wrote and directed it. So, I mean, it just it feels natural that this would be as super an episode as it is. And boy, is it. This episode is the reason. And of course, there's been so much stuff building off this episode because this backstory for Mr. Freeze has been used. I mean, it's pretty much been used as the default ever since this episode, with the exception of the Batman, which changed it up. But other than that, it's been used pretty much as a default origin story in the comics, in video games, in the Smallville Season 11 comics. But this is the reason Mr. Freeze is my favorite Batman villain. The tragic backstory that they give him here, the way he's motivated by love, this is why he's my favorite Batman villain. It's just such a powerful, tragic backstory. I mean, you think just some of his dialogue in this episode, when Batman's like, and you would kill to service your means. This is not verbatim, but Mr. Freeze says to not be able to walk on a hot summer's day on the beach with a warm hand holding yours. Yes, I would kill for that. And just Michael Ansara's performance in this episode, just bringing that tragedy to Mr. Freeze. The final scene with him in his cell when he's talking to Nora and he's begging for her forgiveness. I mean, it makes me cry every single time. Just the tragedy and his voice performance in this, and then just juxtaposed with Mark Hamill's performance as Ferris Boyle, just being this completely sleazy businessman, like Avery Sunderland. So bringing things full circle back to the connection I made earlier on this episode. Just awful. I mean, what he does to Victor Freeze in this episode, it's horrendous. And, you know, I think to the final scene in the episode when Mr. Freeze confronts him, and you know what, I'll bring up the Batman, the episode Riddler's Revenge, a line that always gives me chills in that episode. Is when Batman says to Robin, "When is a villain not the villain?" And I think that line is perfect for that episode of The Batman. I think it's perfect for this episode of Batman Animated Series. This is an instance where Mr. Freeze may be a villain, but the real villain of this episode is Ferris Boyle. Like, you want him so badly, at least I do, to get what's coming to him. And I'm like, that line Batman has in The Batman, I feel, also is perfectly suited if he had said it in this episode, because that's how I feel about Ferris Boyle and Mr. Freeze. And so, I absolutely adore this episode. It, like I said, my favorite of the original run of Batman Animated Series. My super friend, are you in agreement with me on this episode?
I mean, this is the best and quintessential version of Mr. Freeze. Just the emotional weight of this episode. And that's what I always go back to, you know, why I love the Batman Animated Series so much. Because, yes, it's a cartoon. Yes, they wanted the kids to watch. They encouraged the kids to watch. They made it so that it was accessible to children. But it never outright panders to children. And like this is a cartoon that can appeal, because this is a very adult, like the emotions in this episode, you know, that Victor has, and that, like, these are very adult themes and situations and, you know, ideas of loss and stuff like that. So, you know, this is what sets, you know, Batman Animated Series apart from everything else, is because, again, they made a show that is supremely accessible to children, but that really adults can sink their teeth into and get a lot out of. But in terms of Mr. Freeze, you're right about that. I don't think he's the villain in this scenario. You with him. You feel sorry for him. Mm-hmm. And and it's just like you again, like you said, you want what's the Mark Hamill's character?
Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, I was about to say Ferris Bueller, but that's not it. that's a totally different scenario. You want him to get his just due at the hands of Mr. Freeze. So you're actually rooting for Mr. Freeze in this case. I mean, the stuff with Nora, obviously, was touching when he's talking to Nora, or the line that you quoted. If that doesn't get you emotional, then again, see a doctor and have them check your heart and make sure everything's okay.
Maybe you're like Mr. Freeze, like he says in this episode, it would move me to tears if I had any left.
Well, he has an excuse. I don't think anybody else would have that same excuse. So he has a legitimate excuse. So the vocal performances were great. I think from all three main principals involved. That is the, like, when I read the comics, this is the voice that I hear in my head when Mr. Freeze is involved. With Mark Hamill, the beauty of that performance was, now I know because of IMDb and all that stuff, but when I watched that before having all this information at my fingertips, I never would have put two and two together that this was the same guy that voices the Joker. And that's a testament to his vocal range and capability. Kevin Conroy had a difficult job. He did something that, obviously I've never heard or even really seen before. Batman with a cold and having to deal with a cold. But here, think about it. Here's the world's greatest detective, this badass, superhero. And he's dealing with a cold, which is a common thing that, afflicts everybody. But seeing Batman in this situation is a rarity. And then
it's like Clark in the Smallville episode Sneeze.
Yeah. And Alfred's, Alfred's quip about, with all those pockets in your utility belt, you think you'd have room for a tissue, So his dry wit is at it again. He gives him the chicken soup, and then Batman ultimately uses that thermos to his advantage. Which is pretty funny. And I like seeing the Batmobile slip and slide on the ice and all that. And that was a cool visual. Much better than Batman and Robin defecating over my favorite sport, hockey, in that other movie. I can't speak highly enough about this episode. It's up there in my favorite rankings. Now that I'm getting the Blu-ray, which unfortunately in Canada is being released later, so I have to wait till November. It ships November 27th. So that's my personal countdown. There you go. I don't know how many days that is, but it's too goddamn long in my opinion. 20 days is too damn long. That's when it ships. Then by the time I get it, it's another. By the end of the week after this. So probably I'll get it early December. So Merry Christmas to me, to myself. So I might eventually venture and do a ranking when I sit down again and want to start watching the Blu-rays, and I'll make notes about possibly doing a ranking of these things and which is my favorite, like my top 10 or top whatever it is. And maybe we'll do a podcast about it at some point.
That would be awesome.
It's certainly, most definitely, up there as amongst my favorites. Did it now win an award for this episode, I think?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that tells you all you need to know. So, phenomenal. This is fantastic. Got anything else to say? Or else we could just keep bestowing blessings on this episode for the whole day. Anything else specific, or should we rate this thing?
Well, I'll say two more things, which are, one, watching it in HD for the first time in preparation to review it on this podcast episode. It's not the first Batman Animated Series episode I've watched in HD. Ever since they released them on DC Universe in HD, I've been watching, whenever I watch Batman Animated Series, I've been watching episodes in HD. But being that this is my favorite episode of the original run, seeing this one in HD was especially special for me. And just, it looks so beautiful. I'm just like, wow, if this episode could, just when I thought it couldn't be any more perfect, then you see it in this pristine HD. And I mean, wow, I'm even more blown away by it. So I'll mention that. And then also, Batman's line at the end of this episode, I love it so much when he says to Ferris Boyle, good night, humanitarian.
Yeah, and I like the part, and one other thing. I like the part where he's in the office as Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's, boasting about himself and saying, oh, I'm getting an award. And he's like, I'm starting to get sick. Like, and then
he says, I feel ill. And yeah, then Ferris goes, what's that? And then Bruce is
he brings it off of the court.
It's too funny. Oh, man. So, yeah, some humor, as tragic an episode as this is, some pretty good humorous lines in it.
I mean, it's the perfect balance. Like, they found the perfect balance of serious and emotional, but also managed to make it comedic without forcing or making anything cringeworthy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was great stuff all around. So should we go forth and do the what should be obvious ratings at this point?
Let's do it, my super friend.
All right, what do you got?
This episode's an A+. How could it not be? My favorite episode of the original run, like I was saying. Not if we include the new Batman Adventures, but just for the original run. But yeah, it is an A+ for me. I absolutely love this episode. Like I said, Mr. Freeze is my favorite Batman villain, and just it really does all stem back to this episode and this just beautifully tragic backstory that Paul Dini gave him. So, yeah, just A+ without a doubt. What about you, my super friend?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. There's no debate. There's no anything. This is an absolute A+. It's just, it's perfection.
Yeah. Amen to that, my super friend. Well, moving on to something else that I consider perfection, that would be the Aquaman pilot, because that is what we're talking about. We are a little over a month away from the first live-action Aquaman movie ever. I thought it would be absolutely
super. I'm calling him Mira and Friends because, it's just me.
But anyway, I thought it would be super fun to go back and review the Aquaman TV pilot, which never aired on television but was made available on iTunes after the fact, starring a cast pretty much entirely made up of Smallville alumni, which I absolutely adore. This is like Smallville but with Aquaman. It really is, and I absolutely adore this. Let's start off with the IMDb description. Thinking one sentence or more than one sentence.
Well, considering that this show never actually made it to the air, I'd be shocked if they went anything more than one sentence.
You are correct, my super friend, and that one sentence would be, a young 20-something diver living in the Florida Keys discovers he has the power to breathe underwater. Again, succinct, but accurate.
Good God, they're not even putting any effort into these things.
First off, I just got to talk about all the Smallville connections in this episode because I absolutely adore it. I mean, okay, first of all, you've got...
This is like porn for Jordan, people.
It is. I just geek out over this so much. Okay, you've got Oliver Queen playing Aquaman in this. You've got, playing Atlanta, you've got Martha Kent. Well, she just does the voice. She voices over the actress who's actually portraying her in the flesh in this episode. But you've got Martha Kent slash Lana Lang voicing Atlanta. You've got Andrea Rojas playing Lieutenant Torres in this episode. You've got Bob from Hug playing the agent who's working with Lieutenant Torres. You've got Smallville's first Kara, Adrian Palicki, playing the villain of the episode, the Siren. And then you've got Amber McDonald, who played Gloria in the Smallville episode Wither, playing Arthur's love interest in this episode, Ava. So this episode is just filled to the brim with Smallville alumni. Of course, it's written by Al Goff and Miles Millar and directed by Greg Beeman. So all the creators behind this episode are also from Smallville. And then like the whole episode, it feels like Smallville, but at the beach. And I love it. Like everything about this just feels like Smallville. I mean, the way it ends with a pop song at the end, like it's just like the Smallville episode. It's just like the Smallville pilot. Well, a lot of Smallville episodes, but specifically the pilot, just because we're comparing pilot to pilot, ending with Everything by Lifehouse, which is like, I love that scene so much. But I love, obviously I don't love this quite as much, but I also love the end of this, the way it ends. But just, it just feels like the whole vibe of it just feels so much like Smallville. Like I said, with all the Smallville alumni in it, it's just, it's like, I think it rivals Man of Steel for how many Smallville alumni are in it. But I just, the other thing I just want to mention, I love the beach setting, by the way, just because I just love the beach in general. So like, I love the beach setting of it. I think Justin is absolutely super as Aquaman. Ultimately, as much as I adore this pilot, and I really do, I am happy with the way things played out because I love him even more as Green Arrow, and I think we got an absolutely super Aquaman on Smallville anyway with Alan Ritchson. So I'm happy with the way things played out, even though I would have loved for this to go to series. But ultimately, I think things played out for the best. But I just absolutely love it. I love the feeling of it, the atmosphere of it. And just all the Smallville alumni, I adore this pilot. So go ahead and tell me what your thoughts are on my super friend.
Okay, well, first of all, like you mentioned, it does have that very Smallville feel to it, and for a character like Aquaman, I think that really works because, you know, his Atlantean origins, you know, there's so much mystery surrounding, in general, the lost city of Atlantis, that you could really play that angle for a show, or even part of a movie, which we'll see what they do with the movie. But so I think that aspect of it really works for a show. The way it connects people's, you know, the disappearances with the Bermuda Triangle. I love that. Like, that to me, like, I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. The idea of the missing people, connecting it all with the Bermuda Triangle, and, you know, tying all that in with Atlantis, I think is very awesome. And I think it's a cool story hook. In terms of, the focal point being, you know, again, like I said, it's very much like Arthur is discovering his origins along with the audience. And whether it's in book form or in live action form, I always like going on that journey with the characters.
Mm-hmm. It's a parallel right to the Smallville pilot because Clark, in the Smallville pilot, Clark discovers, Jonathan tells him for the first time, of his, well, not, he doesn't know Krypton, he doesn't know it's Kryptonian yet, but of his alien origins, we'll say, even though he doesn't know it's from Krypton. But, and then we see a similar thing happen here with Arthur.
Yeah, and it's, so you're right, it's very on point with Smallville's pilot in that respect. But also, I love the fact that the focus was, you know, a lot. I think a lot of the focus on with Smallville was Clark and Jonathan. Whereas, just judging from the pilot, and where the series would have gone had it gone to series, I think a lot of the crux of the focus would have been on Arthur and his mother, which would have been similar yet different, and would have been an interesting avenue to go on. I mean, like the siren that took his mother, it wound up being the same siren, you know, that he fought later in the episode.
Well, now that I think about it, and I mean, obviously I addressed this earlier, but it's just now really occurring to me that Clark and AC have the same mom. They're brothers, I guess.
Well, vocally speaking, though.
Yeah. Kara attacked Aquaman's mom.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
I'm just, all these connections, it's crazy.
Fake Kara, anyway. Yeah.
What's that?
Fake Kara.
Fake Kara, yes.
Yeah. By the way, I Adrian Palicki is just like the, I mean, I've had a crush on her since Friday Night Lights or whatever the heck it was. So it's nice to see that my Earth 25 wife was in this show as well. For those keeping score, see every episode, I try and work that in. That's my Smallville alum, quote-unquote Smallville alum. My Earth wife, so there you go.
Well, this time, Adrian Palicki counts for both because she's your Earth 25 wife and she's a Smallville alum. So there you go. It works for both of
them. So I'd be a bigamist on Earth 25 because they both pay. But yeah, so no, but she plays a good, like, she's very good in that role of you know, that siren kind of role or what she played in Smallville. Basically, you know, I mean, when Jor-El gives her those powers, she's pretty formidable. So, she's good in that type of role. You know, I thought it was a nice touch having, let's see, just so I get the actor right. Lou Diamond Phillips as Tom Curry. I think that's a great choice.
One of the only actors in this that's not a Smallville alum.
Yeah. And it was actually, I got to say, because Denise Quinones did this after Smallville. So it was nice to see her in this. So her role, it's funny because she, being a fighter pilot, it's kind of like she's almost like a Carol Ferris type, which was
yeah
in nodding to another DC character. I really like the idea of Ving Rhames, however you pronounce it, as, you know, Arthur's mentor and confidant, and the fact that he was from Atlantis was also a nice twist, and sort of like he was going to be his guide into that world, and that would have been a good role for him, I think. I mean, but I've generally liked him from the Mission Impossible
series. And it's sort of like how on Smallville, in addition to having Jonathan as Clark's father, of course, he later on had father figures in both Lionel and Martian Manhunter. And so I sort of see McCaffrey on Aquaman filling a similar role where he's a father, even though he's not Arthur's father, he's a father figure.
Yeah. And it's funny because Justin Hartley, as Arthur. I was going to say Oliver for a second. was really pretty much from based on 42 minutes was more yes than no playing the quote-unquote traditional version of Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, and I mean that from a visual sense and everything, you know, like the general personality aspect, whereas, you know, Jason Momoa is going to be playing a more, it's like, okay, so Jason Momoa is basically playing the Peter David 90s Aquaman, mixed with New 52 Aquaman.
Yeah.
But Justin Hartley was playing the more traditional, you know, early Inception, minus the jokes, version of Aquaman. And he did a good job, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very believable in the role. And I think, even though I'm happy that, like, look, the fact that this went to series, didn't go to series, ultimately worked out because we got Justin Hartley as Oliver Queen.
Yeah.
And eventually Jason Momoa as Aquaman, and had this gone forward, we definitely wouldn't have gotten Justin Hartley as Green Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows whether Warner Bros. Would have made an Aquaman movie had this series run a long course.
I think that still probably would have happened.
I mean, that's more up in the air, but it begs the question because who knows? They may have decided, you know, he was on TV. That's, you know, they have that stupid edict where they pick and choose what goes on TV, what doesn't.
I mean, so, Man of Steel came out 2 years after Smallville ended its television.
I'm just saying, who knows? It could have affected, could have not. So ultimately, I think things worked out the way they were supposed to. Mm-hmm. However, the intriguing possibility of seeing where the series could have gone with the Atlantean mythology, I would have definitely been in for a weekly tune-in situation for sure. It's a double-edged sword because I wanted to see where they would have taken it, or would have taken it, I should say, but at the same time, I'm happy the way things shaked out, both for Justin Hartley as Green Arrow and for Jason Momoa's upcoming Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a great piece of DC on TV history. I'm glad that it was made available for us to see. Yeah, it's just I would have watched it, but we've gotten Justin Hartley in the DC universe, and we're certainly getting more of Aquaman. So all worked out as was intended, I guess. But this was is definitely an entertaining watch, and. I look at it as I see it as an Elseworlds scenario, basically. That's the way I look at this pilot. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I love, well, a couple other things I wanted to point out. I love all the underwater stuff. Like, I think it's shot really cool, and just seeing all of that, I love it. And then also the final line that McCaffrey has I almost called him Oliver too, to AC, when he says the lesson isn't in the ending, it's in the journey. I feel that not only was that obviously meant to be sort of the a tagline for their approach to this Aquaman series, but also I feel. And, I mean, obviously this is just natural based on how much this took inspiration from Smallville. I feel that that's a perfect way to sum up Smallville in a lot of ways, because that's always what I've said about Smallville, is it's so brilliant because it shows us the journey of Clark Kent to Superman so well. And that's always been my defense against a lot of people who were frustrated by the fact that we never actually saw Tom in costume in the finale. I mean, we saw the faraway shots and then him ripping open the shirt, but that's why I've always said it was perfect. To me, in my eyes, it is perfect that Smallville season 10 ended with the shirt rip, because it's giving us the final transitional moment into him being Superman. Like, we're seeing the moment where the show's ending with that final transitional moment, with his final moment before transitioning into Superman, further emphasizing that the show was all about that journey leading up to it. And so, you see what I'm trying to say here, I guess. I feel that this line from the Aquaman pilot fits with that, too. So.
Yeah, and just to go back to what you're saying, I think for TV and for, 2006 technology, I thought the underwater stuff looked fine, looked solid. And it would have been interesting, like I said, would have been interesting to see how they would have played Atlantis. How do we have gotten there?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, and then I'll point out one more other thing. Do you think that the place they live in, being called Tempest Reef, is a nod to Garth in the comics, Tempest?
Oh, I definitely think that played a part into it. Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
I think that was probably.
I definitely see that.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Oh, so, and I'll throw it. Can I say one other thing?
Yeah.
The fact that it's filmed in Florida reminds me of Superboy, because Superboy was also filmed in Florida. And so good, I love that aspect
good point.
Too.
Yeah. Good point.
Cool. Well, I guess, are you ready to rate it?
Let's do it. What's your rating on this thing?
My rating for this pilot is an A+. I adore this pilot so much. It's, again, like I said before, it's Smallville but with Aquaman, pretty much. And obviously everybody knows Smallville is my favorite thing ever, and so seeing something that takes so much inspiration from it with another DC character is just it just makes me so happy. I mean, I absolutely adore it. Sort of echoing what you were saying, and I was touching on this earlier. Ultimately, I am happy with the way things played out, because, Alan Ritchson had already appeared as Aquaman on Smallville before this, but then he continued, after this didn't get picked up, he continued appearing.
I think had this gotten picked up, I think it would have been...
Yeah, I don't know if they would have kept him around on Smallville, but I'm ultimately happy with the way things played out, because I love Alan Ritchson as Aquaman, and then I love Justin Hartley as Green Arrow. So I'm super happy with the way things ultimately played out, but I still I would have loved to have seen this go to series 2, because this pilot just held so much promise for me, and I absolutely adore it. A+ for me, without a doubt. What are your thoughts? Not your thoughts, but I guess just, well, yes, your overall thoughts.
Yeah, it would have been, I think it's a solid pilot, and I think it does the job of a pilot, which is, it sets the table for the world you're gonna visit in this series, and it leaves you eagerly anticipating more. So job well done in that respect. And so with that, I got to give it a solid 80, because it does its job adequately. So more than adequately, actually. A definite A for me.
Sounds good, my super friend.
Awesome. And that pretty much, I think, wraps us up this week, does it not?
It does indeed, my super friend.
And with that, since today was dominated by mostly Smallville, Swamp Thing news, it's worth pointing out that we are part of the Batman Podcast Network. So if you want all Batman content to listen to after you listen to this, then go to the Batman Podcast Network, and you will find whatever your heart desires in terms of Batman, over there.
We did talk about Gotham on this episode, so
right, but that was a very small fraction by comparison.
We talked. Hold up, we reviewed a Batman the Animated Series episode.
Oh yeah, what am I saying? Never mind. But point still, yeah, because you know what it is. You derailed my thought process when you went into that diatribe about the Smallville connection. So that's what. But yeah, no. If you want more Batman than Batman the Animated Series episode, that we reviewed, then go there and you can find even more.
Should I start listing off all the Smallville alumni who were on Batman the Animated Series?
No, I'll save that for the next time we do a Batman Animated Series episode. talk to us on social media. You can do that. So, Jordan, where can they do that to get in touch with you?
Yes. Well, you can find me on Twitter at SmallvilleFanJV. And also on a lot of other social media, including DC All Access and the DC Universe streaming service at Jordan from Smallville. And I also want to list some iTunes reviews. So if you like what you hear from us, or if you don't, which not as good, but that's okay too. You can leave us an iTunes review. That would help us out a lot, and we'd really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And until next time, we hope you have a wonderful week. Or wonderful weekend, depending on when you're listening to this. Until next time, so long, everybody.
Klonna forever. Bye-bye.